Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck, along with Shadmar Quitz. We are going to be focusing a lot on the precious metals, as well as at the tail end of this show. The final two segments of this hour, we're going to be focusing a bit more on some companies, and not just company interviews, analysts that we bring on the show, companies that they see opportunities in the resource sector. And let's face it, look, a lot of resource companies have sold off this year. Unfortunately, they continue to sell off this week, but when the sector turns, you do need to have a good idea of what stocks you like, and who knows, even be taking positions during this tax loss selling season, because as much as we wanted that to be pushed forward, unfortunately, the continued drift lower in prices does still open up more of that selling opportunity in some of these stocks. But first things first, we're going to focus on precious metals and some other commodities as we are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Jeff, let's start off with gold, because gold, it was looking encouraging for gold throughout the first about 3 weeks of November, and then that whole bullish narrative, again, in the short-term sense, turned on its head as we had gold slice through a bunch of support levels and below that 1800 level. We are recording this about halfway through the day on Friday, and gold is bouncing back a little bit, sitting right around that 1780 level. Either way, gold's back below 1800. What's your takeaway, Jeff, from this continued pressure that, again, seems to be fairly consistent for gold throughout this year?
Well, it's really been throughout this year. You know, gold, I guess, really peaked in June or July, and it came down hard, fought its way back up in early November, and now, you know, we're $100+ below that. You know, our take is that, you know, you're in this trading range of maybe 1750 to 1800 right now. We saw 1811 earlier in the week. We're concerned that gold and silver are vulnerable to another leg down. And, you know, what do I mean by another leg down? I wouldn't be surprised to see gold, you know, break below. It got below 1770 on Thursday. It's back above it as we're talking right now. But I would not be surprised to see another leg down that could take gold down as low as 1750. Now, you know, you're seeing a lot of investors who are expressing a lot of confidence, at least they're voting with their dollars, confidence in the economy and in the stock market. But you're also seeing a lot of other investors, you know, over the last several days, there were net additions into the ETFs. So you have any number of investors who are saying, okay, 1770, 1780, these are good price levels at which to add to my gold positions. But right now there's an overwhelming bearishness, and so I would not be surprised to see the prices spike down during December and then, you know, sort of recover in January, February.
Well, Jeff, that's what I was going to ask you, kind of on a seasonality basis, and I know it changes from year to year, but there's generally that sell down into the end of the year, and then that what we call the Q1 run, where January, February, there's a little bounce in the precious metals, but it's been really range bound for so long, almost a year now. What do you think would be the catalyst that could actually get more generalist investors interested in the precious metals, and what would get gold enough juice to break out of the range that it's been in on a positive move higher?
It's really hard to say. You know, I mean, you've already got very low nominal interest rates. You've got very low real interest rate, negative real interest rates. Inflation has picked up. You know, all of the things that should be stimulating investment demand for gold is not necessarily stimulating investment demand for gold. I do think that what you'll see over the course of 22 is very nasty politics in the United States. And very nasty international affairs, China versus the U.S., China versus Canada, China versus Europe, Russia versus Europe and the United States. I think that, you know, we've been telling our clients for a couple months now that we think that political factors, both domestic and international, may well be much more important in 2022 than economic and financial market trends. You know, the other thing to watch out for is financial market stability. You know, while interest rates are low and the stock market's high and the economy is recovering in a relatively fair way, that doesn't necessarily change things with the deficit spending and the debt levels, both on a sovereign level and on a corporate and private individual level. And you could see some financial market instability. There's nothing on the horizon that we're looking at, but we're just, you know, historically, that's one of the things that shakes the tree and causes investors to start saying, I should be owning more gold and silver. So we're kind of watching for that. But what we're really focusing on are the political factors, both domestic and not just domestic in the U.S., domestic in the U.S. and China and parts of Europe, and international politics. I think that that's the area that we're watching right now to sort of see what's going to change that's going to cause investors to say, okay, that's that. Now, I will say one other thing. I mean, people, I don't know how many people tell me, yeah, why is gold so low? Gold is basically at record levels. I mean, it got up to a record high on an intraday basis in August of 2020, and it's come down significantly from that. But if you look at a long-term gold price chart, prices at 1770, 1780 are close to those historic highs. And on an annual average basis, it's been very high. So I don't quite understand the negative attitudes toward gold or silver for that matter in the market. You know, I think there might be some overly enthusiastic expectations as to what gold and silver should be doing.
I think that's a good way of outlining it, because really, if you look at the gold price, entered the year around 1900, spiked right at the beginning of the year, and then dropped very quickly after that. But still, 1900 to where we are now, 1780, it's down about 7% this year, which you would sure feel like it's down 20%, which is what the stocks are down. GDX is down 20%. But yeah, 7% pullback. Look, the problem is gold's been beaten by practically every other market and sector out there this year. I know that there's been other sectors that have underperformed gold, but gold's been a laggard in that sense because people are making money elsewhere. How much does that play into the psychology and the reason why gold is so unloved right now?
That's exactly it. And it's a very complex relationship. You know, people talk about, well, the relationship between stocks and gold, stock prices and gold prices. And the relationship is actually very low. I mean, you know, over time, it's negative 4%, you know, but even if you just look at it since the Great Recession, you know, it's negative 7% against the S&P and negative 8% against the Dow Jones, changes in the gold price. You know, and that's because it's a very complex relationship. There are times when stock prices are high, and that actually correlates with high gold prices. And that's because people are long stocks, stocks are doing very well, and the investors are nervous. So they start moving some of their assets into gold. The opposite's happening right now. Stocks are very high, and the nervousness that we saw, you know, and we did see nervousness in May and June, which was, you know, contributed to that rise in the gold price during that period of time. Investors are saying, okay, stocks is doing well, and I'm worried because they're doing so well, and it doesn't make sense given the economic environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now they're sort of saying, okay, stocks are high, and I'm not that nervous about it because, yeah, we've had a couple of nasty spikes down, but the equity markets bounce right back. And, you know, for all of the weakness that we've seen in the last two or three weeks in the Dow Jones and the S&P 500, they're back to levels that we saw at the beginning of November in the case of NASDAQ, the S&P, and probably October or September levels for the Dow. So investors are not nervous right now about the fact that the stock market's very high. If that nervousness returns, then you could see investors start moving back into gold and the gold price would rise again. Why would that nervousness return? It's probably going to be some sort of political development out of Washington.
Well, Jeff, let's pivot over to gold's scrappy little brother, silver. And it's a precious metal as well, but it's also a hybrid metal in the sense that it's also an industrial metal. It seems to be tethered more to the commodity sector as a whole and more to the movements in copper and nickel and other base metals. How do you see the setup in silver, and how do you see it playing out as we move into the end of the year and beginning of 2022?
Yeah, I mean, silver's been even weaker than gold. And my view, again, is it's also set itself up for the possibility of another big spike down. And I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see silver spike down to $21. I think it's about 22 right now, I think. So it's
we're pretty much there, Jeff. We're in the low 22s already. That's not much of a move down.
But I was saying this, you know, I was saying this 2 weeks ago when the price was $25. So I do think that, you know, silver is showing much greater weakness, and you're seeing the weakness in investment demand. You're seeing very high inventories. And you also have, you know, maybe it's a direct result of the silver squeeze nonsense in the first quarter. There are a lot of people who are disenchanted with silver. And again, I'd say, okay, it's $25, but or it's $22, but you know, compare that to where the price was a year ago. Yeah, you, know, you compare the silver price to the annual average silver price, and you know, on an annual average price, on an annual average, the silver price is up 27% year to date, right? And people are sitting there saying, oh, it's so weak, it's so low. And you say, what do you mean it's so weak, it's so low? It's up 27% on an annual average, and the price is much higher than it was a year ago. And they say, yeah, but it's not $100. I mean, I've been told that the squeeze was going to drive it to $100 or $300 or $700, and it's not there. And it's like these irrational expectations that were based on nothing but a sugar high are causing a lot of investors to be disenchanted with silver when they really should be happy. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, the average price of silver last year was $20. It's the average year to date through November is $25.50. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good return. Yeah, maybe it doesn't match the Dow Jones, but compared to silver shares or gold shares, it's doing pretty well. It's an irrational expectation that's causing disenchantment for now.
Yeah, I think the problem is, too, Jeff, silver is ending this year, unless we get a big spike at the end of the year, close to some of the lowest levels of the year, right? The lowest level silver hit this year was 21.41 right before October. We're closing in on that level. I think people are depressed simply because, they're seeing that downtrend and they're seeing how weakly silver is closing this year, right? It's not a positive outlook for at least the near term turning the corner here.
Yeah, on a short-term basis. Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of our work is for producers and institutional investors who take a long-term view. Shorter-term investors get very short-tempered with us because we talk about, well, yeah, you know, the average price is very up, very high. That's what matters to a producer. That's what matters to a fabricator that's using silver in some sort of manufactured product. And that's what matters really to long-term investors. And it's not these spikes higher and lower. But again, I do think that a large part of the disenchantment with silver, which is reflected in the lower price, has been people who, you know, they drank the Kool-Aid in the first quarter and they thought that the price would be $100 by now. And, you know, it's not, you know.
Yeah, we've been in this sector long enough to know that those $100 or $500 calls for silver, you should be running away from those type of commentators, because maybe one day they'll be right, but that's not a guarantee anytime soon. Jeff, you did mention that the guys you deal with, these longer-term funds, these larger investors looking at the longer-term outlook, why are they still then so encouraged by precious metals when they have been going through a year and a half correction and have been lagging every other sector?
Well, I think that, you know, first off, a lot of them bought earlier. You know, they didn't buy in the first quarter of this year during all the hoopla. They bought, you know, last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. So they're still sitting on pretty good profits, but they take a longer term approach. So they don't necessarily look at price charts. They look at the macroeconomic environment, the financial market stability, all of the new regulations that are coming down in the U.S., Canada, Europe, China, in terms of financial market regulations that are raising not only the costs of being a banker or a broker, but also the uncertainties as to what, you know, what are the unintended consequences of some of these regulations, especially like the shift away from LIBOR, which is coming down the pike, and the BIS thing. And so they look at a lot of these macroeconomic factors. They look at global economic factors. They look at political issues. And, you know, there's this view that relations between China and the rest of the world are going to get more hostile. And it doesn't matter what the Chinese do, because other countries don't trust them. And that lack of trust is being reflected in policies, which then exacerbates the Chinese lack of trust in everybody else. And so, you know, these longer term investors look at these global political, economic, and financial trends, and they say it doesn't make sense to have all of your eggs in the stock market basket, which is overvalued, and the bond market basket, which is also overvalued, you know, with historically low and negative rates that are probably not going to change anytime in the near term. So the longer term investors, a lot of the people that we deal with, are not fazed by, you know, the fact that the gold price dropped $80 in the last 3 weeks, or that the silver price is down $8 from its intraday peak 9 months ago, 10 months ago.
Well, Jeff, that's good to hear that they're taking the more long-term approach. And as you've mentioned, the metals prices as they sit today are fine for the producers, and they're historically pretty high prices. One sector that's been really interesting and kind of bifurcated are, I guess, the last two precious metals, even though they're really more industrial metals, and that's platinum and palladium. Palladium went on a crazy run higher over the last 2 years, and platinum is really depressed. It's depressed relative to palladium, and it's depressed relative to gold. So what do you make of the PGMs here in the current setup?
You know, we've been saying for some time that we thought that there'd be a reversal of fortunes between platinum and palladium. You know, platinum was dead in the water between $800 and $1,000 from 2015 until earlier this year. It was just in that range. And palladium just went from strength to strength, from, you know, $700 to $800 to, you know, I don't know, $4,000 or something at its peak. And we've been saying for some time that we thought on a long-term basis that you'd see a reversal of fortunes. Well, you've seen that, and palladium has come off. And platinum, you know, broke over $1,000 and it made a run up to $1,300. It's now back to $924, which is a little bit surprising. I think what you're seeing there is pessimism about the auto industry. The auto industry has done a very poor job in explaining the problems it's having with its chip shortages and other component shortages. And even though the auto industry is doing a little bit better this year, there's this view that no one's building automobiles, and ergo, no one needs platinum and palladium. It's probably not true. So, you know, from a longer-term perspective, we do think that the platinum price will break back above $1,000. But for now, you've got some bearishness there that is pushing the platinum price down, even as the palladium price falls. I think that, and, you know, you talk to the auto industry, they're talking about this chip shortage continuing to have problems for a long time to come, well into the second or even now maybe the third quarter of 2022. And some guys are even talking about 2023 still having constraints on component supplies. So that, I think, is being reflected in bearishness on both platinum and palladium. Longer term, you know, I don't see palladium rising to new highs. You are seeing reverse substitution back into platinum, more platinum use and less palladium use in auto catalysts. That should push platinum prices higher at some point, but maybe not in the immediate future.
Well, just one more on platinum, Jeff, and that is that for the longest time, platinum held a premium to gold. I was joking with somebody the other day. When you think about when I got credit cards 20-some years ago in college, I was excited to go from a silver member to a gold member and then that elite platinum status, because platinum as a metal is more rare than gold. And it is a precious metal in the sense it's stockpiled as bullion, as coins, and as bars, but it's really more of an industrial metal. Do you think it'll ever regain that premium on gold, or have things shifted now due to the financial backdrop in the world?
I think it probably stays at a discount to gold. It's funny because, yeah, my first day at J. Aaron, when I went to J. Aaron to work in their research department, was the first trading day of December, and platinum had fallen to a discount to gold. And yeah, my first hour on the job, they said, so, you know, normally they said, what do you think about this? You know, platinum's at a discount to gold, and we would normally buy platinum and sell gold. I said, don't do that. I mean, gold is relatively high. It was about $600 at the time, I think, because we were in a recession and we had 14% inflation and U.S. hostages in Iran and a variety of other things going on. Soviet troops in Afghanistan, quadrupling of oil prices. So it makes sense that gold would be strong and platinum is weak because it's used in the auto industry, which is in a recession. So no, don't do that. And they took my advice and made a lot of money. And it was about 2 or 3 years before platinum restored its premium to gold, by which time the auto industry was recovering and a lot of those economic and political problems had been resolved or dealt with to some varying extent, degrees of success. So I think that I look at platinum and its fortunes are tied to the platinum industry, to the auto industry. I think people underestimate the long-term usage of petroleum in vehicles. You know, if you look at the IEA, International Energy Association Agency, or CPM Group's projections for the auto population over the next 30 years, we still have a significant number of vehicles burning petroleum 30 years from now. You know, I know politicians say they want to get rid of them in 10 or 15 years, but logistically that just can't happen, you know, for a variety of real world reasons. So you look at the auto industry, they're going to need PGMs, platinum, palladium, and rhodium to clean up emissions for at least the next three decades and maybe probably a lot longer. And I think the markets have written off petroleum-powered vehicles and PGMs use in them to an excessive degree. And at some point over the next several years, that's probably going to correct, at which point people are going to realize, you know, the world doesn't have enough platinum, newly refined platinum coming out of mines to meet future demand. And when that happens, I do think that the platinum price rises. But at the same time, I'm looking at record high gold prices. So I think that gold will probably maintain its premium over platinum for the foreseeable future.
All right, Jeff, before I get you out of here, there's one thing you alluded to a number of times when we've talked about all these precious metals is that you see politics as being a potential key driver next year, not just in the U.S., globally, but U.S. is always a main consideration. What are some of the changes? What could come out of the political sphere that you think does change investor sentiment?
Well, I think one of the things that we're looking at is the current situation with Russia, the Ukraine, and the U.S./NATO. You know, I mean, that's some real saber rattling there, and both sides are very intransigent. The Russians really don't want NATO supporting or defending Ukraine. They don't want the Ukraine joining NATO. And NATO is basically saying, you know, up yours, you know. Well, actually, the head of NATO, NATO's leaders are meeting in Riga, Latvia this week. And, you know, Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania used to be Soviet republics. Now they're members of NATO. And NATO is purposefully meeting right there, like, you know, a couple hundred miles from Moscow. And Putin's saying, hey, we don't like NATO being that close to Russia. And the head of NATO said, Russia doesn't have a veto power. You know, whether we allow Ukraine into NATO is a decision that the Ukraine and NATO will make, not Russia. And that is a very intransigent area. Yeah, Russia's got 90,000 troops on the border of the Ukraine poised to come in. There's a question as to what NATO would do. And the somewhat feckless leader of NATO this week, when he was asked, what would you do, said, oh, well, we'll impose more stringent sanctions. Well, that doesn't scare Russia, because if you want to impose sanctions on Russia, they'll just cut off the oil and gas to Europe at the beginning of winter. You know, so that could be a very nasty situation. Then you have the U.S. saber rattling with China, and China responding in kind. So you have two, you know, aircraft carrier strike forces from the U.S. and another one from England in the waters off of China. And there's all kinds of saber rattling there, which could be reflected in greater trade sanctions and tensions, which could then further exacerbate supply chain issues. So I think those are two of the big issues. And then obviously you have the U.S. elections, and you might see some very interesting indictments related to the January 6th insurrection attempt. And even if you don't see the indictments, you probably see all kinds of very interesting revelations. So I think that U.S. politics are going to be very unsettled and unsettling, and you're going to still see a very much of a deadlocked Congress.
All right, Jeff, we're going to wrap it up here. Always great chatting with you, buddy. We're going to have you back on before the end of the year for more of a year-end recap, but we really did recap some of the moves in the metals, and I think maybe provide some hope heading into next year. But fact of the matter is, unfortunately, the way we ended November and how we've even started December has been on a bit of a weak foot. So let's see how tax loss selling plays out. Let's see how the other markets continue to do into next year, because sentiment, unfortunately, for the metals is quite low. And that is, as you've outlined, as prices are still in a historic level, quite high. But it's a downtrend that matters for investors right now, unfortunately. Jeff, thank you as always for your time. Again, Jeff is a managing partner over at the CPM Group. We'll chat again in another few weeks. Jeff, have a great rest of your weekend.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.